All right, so good afternoon. I'm not going to call us to order because this isn't a formal meeting. This is a workshop for the board to dig in to the master matrix, what the county's role is and could be. And so the first thing to underscore as we start, first of all, I'm Rick Sanders. I'm the chair this year of the Story County Board of Supervisors. First thing to underscore is don't expect any action out in today's meeting, right? There may be some things that the board chooses to refer back for additional information where we could have action in the future, but this is not a meeting where we're looking to change anything or do anything. We're looking to receive information and really understand our role as it exists today in the master matrix and as it could be going forward given the law and the lay of the land. So the impetus of all this was actually being probably from, was it 6 months ago or so that you gave a presentation? So Gene Tinker, who is with DNR, gave an online presentation, and actually I was part of it live and asked a few questions during the presentation, but about the master matrix, about the county's role in the master matrix. I thought it was a great presentation. Loris and Marty, I think you guys both watched it after the fact, and I believe that presentation was the impetus behind you requesting this workshop.
Correct. As I ran for supervisor, I was asked several times in forums if I would introduce a resolution calling for a moratorium against confinement operations. And I declined to do that every time because I had some great fears, including loss of the master matrix, which I felt was one of our few opportunities to be able to look at each application that came forward. Watching Mr. Tinker's seminar to county supervisors made me realize that there might be an opportunity to have dialogue to learn exactly what can we do. I think probably everybody in this room is concerned about water quality, air quality. There's how it's approached is different for different people, and I see this as an opportunity for us to learn what is it that we can do to recognize the existence of confinement operations, how they operate in the county, and then to move forward in how do we evaluate anybody who wants to expand or add, given all the concerns that are out there.
Thanks. So, Laura asked for us to have this meeting for those reasons, and it's our long-standing practice, and I hope it continues practice here in Story County, that we always try to gather information and improve our knowledge base for our role as supervisors. So, we're going to go through, and we're going to start with Margaret Janes, who is our Environmental Health Director, and she's going to kind of take us through how you built the meeting that Laura requested you to build it, and what we're going to do with that. But before we do that, I want to mention two things. First, Story County handles it a little differently than I believe most counties, and Gene might be able to address this as well as anybody, but Story County put together a group of staff members to review any master matrix that comes forward. So it no longer resides with one person. It no longer, Story County is not a, I know many counties are just kind of a pass-through for whatever the potential producer puts forward, and that passes through DNR. I saw that somebody used an outside group to score their. We score ours in-house when we get a master matrix. That team is led by Margaret Janes, Environmental Health, and then we'll go right down the table. We've got Keith Morgan, who is Emergency Management. He reviews those along with Melissa Spencer, his deputy. Wayne Strickerath, our county assessor, is part of that group. Wayne, you want to raise your hand. Darren Moon, our county engineer, is up here at the table. He's part of that group. Mike Cox, who's our director of conservation, is part of that group. And Jerry Moore, who is our planning and development director, is part of that group. Our intent when we created this system about a year ago, Margaret, is a bit of, okay, 2015, when we created this system, is that we can get to as impartial professional a system as possible in scoring any master matrix as we try to determine whether we refer it to DNR with a recommendation to approve or a recommendation to deny. And I'm really excited about the professionalism that we have looking into that. The second one is I want to introduce or have them introduce the other two gentlemen that are up at this table. Actually, I'll handle it. We've got Dr. Dan Anderson here, who is with Iowa State and an expert in this field, and then Gene Tinker, who is at DNR and is really the boots on the ground representation from the DNR to handle this. So the way we're going to go through this meeting, Margaret's going to give some opening comments. Then we're going to go to Ethan Anderson, who is our civil attorney for the county, and he's going to talk to the board for just a minute about what our legal authority is in all this. You guys, I think everybody in this room knows it's a convoluted system, right? The county, I believe, and this is me editorializing, gets all the responsibility but none of the authority, right? We get to hear all the feedback. We get to receive all the comments. But at the end of the day, all we get to do is recommend something to DNR. DNR makes the final decision. We want to know exactly what, if any, authority we have in all this. So we'll go to Ethan. Then we're going to go through, I think, some specific questions, Loris, that you and Margaret came up with and have the group address them. Then we're going to get to public comments. I've got one person who's already requested to speak. Evan Berger has requested to speak when we get to the public comments section. And so I'll have him, but we'll hear from anybody else who wants to speak when we get to that point. The only thing I'm going to ask is that in our first round through public speaking, we're going to go with 3 minutes for you to say whatever you've got to say or ask whatever you want to ask, and then we're going to try to get everybody through so that everybody can speak. And then if we have time at the end, we'll go back through and people can come up and speak again. I do need to note that I've got to be in Story City at 3 p.m. for a watershed meeting. And so I will be departing at some time before 3 o'clock to get to that. But I'm excited about this conversation. With that, Margaret, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. You covered it very well. I don't have a lot to say after you finish. I want to thank everyone for coming. This is obviously a very important topic for everyone, and that's why we're all showing up to talk about this today. The Board of Supervisors requested the committee hold a workshop to discuss scoring protocols. As I know, most county residents agree that livestock production is an important part of our county economy. Manure is good for soil health, and meat consumption is a cornerstone of the American diet. The concerns voiced by our residents, some specific and some general in nature, include water quality, air quality, antibiotics, animal welfare, property values, and road degradation from the building of these high-density animal feeding operations. Format. We'll start off with Ethan. A lot of talk will be about how we are going to possibly implement this, and we will go through as many questions as we can. We will try to keep it short on this initial meeting, and then we will get the written version down and post that to the website for later review. Comments from the audience, please limit them to suggestions for improving our scoring process here, and I'd appreciate that. So with that, I will introduce Ethan Anderson, civil attorney for scoring.
Okay, thank you. I was asked to speak on the county's role and responsibilities. We'll jump right in with Iowa Code Chapter 459, statutory framework for the master matrix. And what it does is provides for local input into this process, a little local review, but the final decision-making authority, of course, rests with the Iowa DNR. I do want to point out as a caveat, portions of my presentation were adapted from an Iowa DNR publication on the Master Matrix, and that's available on the DNR website at iowadnr.gov/AFO. So we know that not all animal feeding operations require construction permits. It's only specific if that is certain small animal units, then we require the construction permit. And it doesn't apply to open feed lots. So here's a couple of different things, 1 through 9, that the county shall, and there's one that's optional for the county. So we see the first thing the county has to do is they have to document, so when an application is received, the county shall fill a receipt form, turn that into Iowa DNR, and then we're going to provide a public notice. The county shall provide public notice, and we'll again use Iowa DNR's form that's attached to the master matrix application. And then, as Chairman Rick alluded to, we will score the master matrix in the committee here in Story County, The scoring has to be objective. Not every question needs an answer, but it's got to be a minimum threshold score with percentage, a certain percentage in the air and water quality. The next is the county shall visit the site, so that's the opportunity for the county marker here to accompany DNR and visit those sites. We're going to keep a copy of the application available for public inspection. That's one thing the county shall do. And then we got to provide proof of publication that we published notice, and these all follow a pretty specific timeline that's set out in Iowa Code Chapter 459 and the Iowa Administrative Rules Chapter 65. We won't go into the weeds on that, but it's sufficient to say that the county will follow through and do the proof of publication. And then the optional one is the public hearing. But I think since that's what we really want to do with the master matrix is get the public input. It's important to have that hearing so we can get the comments from the local citizens and impacted entities. And then the county shall make a recommendation. The county may either approve or disapprove, independent of the final score. So even if it's a passing score, the county can still recommend disapproval. Failing score, the county can still recommend disapproval. But again, I don't think the DNR is going to do anything with that one. And the final thing they're going to do is submit that application to DNR. Now, this point of the presentation is where I borrow from Gene Tinker's slideshow so everyone can see. And this is kind of the general backgrounds out of the way. Now, let's get into a little more specifics here. This was an example Gene had in his slideshow that kind of guided our discussion. And, for example, the master matrix, this is straight out of the master matrix there at the bottom of the screen. It's question number 14. We talked about filters. So for the applicant to get the scores for the filter, if they have a filter, they can apply, select that as a scoring item, and get potentially 10 points there for air. But the little italicized language that follows the question says the design, operation, and maintenance must be put on the construction permit application and made a condition of the approved construction permit. This is where Gene points out, and this is where the county has potential opening. So this is a limited opening to take a more active rather than passive role. I'm going to call it terminology design standards. This is where the county can impose some design standards. You're going to see, for example, question 13 in the master matrix talks about the emergency overflow. The emergency overflow also has the italicized language at the end that says design standards. And so what we're going to see there is the master matrix itself, Story County cannot exceed the standards set forth in the master matrix. So if we want to contemplate design standards, we can't say, for example, that it exceeds 5% of the total volume of the waste material, manure. So that's the DNR master matrix form has set forth 5%. We cannot, in our design standards, exceed that. It goes on to say then that there needs to be a certain type of soil underneath the ground. We can't change that. In addition, another thing to think about is we can't exceed the requirements of Chapter 65 of the Iowa Administrative Code. What's in the Iowa Administrative Code is a long list of definitions of things. I think Gene would agree that filter, for example, is not defined in the Iowa Administrative Code. That's what opens it up for, that's what gives us this small opening to define those standards. That standard's not defined. So if we're looking through, we're thinking about what we can do with the little bit of leeway we have here, the limited leeway we have for the design standards, we're going to have to look through each of those different items, make sure they're not violating our administrative code, make sure they don't exceed the standards set forth in the master matrix itself, and then we cannot preempt state law. I'll talk about more of that in a few minutes here, but can't preempt state law, and then Story County should not exceed industry standards. So even if we have this little leeway and the county decides they'd like to impose some design standards on applicants to follow in terms of a filter,
This filter cannot exceed industry standards.
Now, I'll concede
that industry standards is maybe a bit of a loosey-goosey term. I think there would have to be some further input from IDNR on what they mean by, or what the industry standard actually is. But that would merit further research.
So, in summary, I know I've kind of thrown a lot of information out there, but the potential implementation that the county could consider legally would be a general local ordinance. This cannot be a zoning ordinance. It cannot be a zoning ordinance because that is preempted by state law. You have the A exemption in Iowa Codes 335.2. It says, no ordinance of this chapter shall apply to land, farm, farmhouses, farm barns, farm outbuildings, or other buildings or structures which are primarily adapted by reason of nature and area for use for agricultural purposes. So, as Jerry likes to say, exempt is exempt. So when it says that exempt from local zoning, that's what it means. We cannot preempt state law. We cannot go and impose local zoning standards. Now, there's cases from Hancock County where they've tried to do that. And that gets into home rule limitations. So a brief primer on home rule, adopted in 1978, laws followed in 1981, gave broad authority to counties. And the home rule says, in Iowa Code 331, a county may exercise any power and perform any function it deems appropriate to protect the rights, privileges, and property of the county or of its residents. The county can exercise any power, perform any function it deems appropriate. That's limited by state law and limited by preemption of state law. So this Hancock County case from a number of years ago, they had sought to impose standards on five hog confinements. They did so through an environmental health ordinance. The court found that that environmental health ordinance was actually a zoning ordinance. And it was just pretending to be an environmental health ordinance. So if it's the primary nature of the ordinance is zoning, it's going to be shot down by the courts. The courts are going to, the county's not going to, that's not going to pass muster. So that's the home rule limitations. And the home rule limitations is set forth in the Seymour case. The Seymour case is from 2015. And what the Seymour case does is it shuts the door. It tightens up the door on local control through home rule. So, Seymour case, I can read the kind of the holding here. It says, under home rule, a county cannot enact an ordinance that expressly or impliedly conflicts with state law. So express or imply preemption, those are the common forms of state law preemption. So the zoning ordinance would be an example of an express preemption, and then an environmental health ordinance that is really a zoning ordinance would be viewed as implied preemption. Those are some good things to keep in mind. I think the takeaway is kind of a caution for the committee and for the board when they're thinking about this. The caution is, although we have this limited chance to take more of an active role, there may be a little opening. We want to make sure that that opening actually exists, because that Seymour case really shuts down local control and signals a line of cases over two decades of the state legislature shutting down, and the courts interpreting it as shutting down the local control over egg production. So any approach would have to be a general local ordinance, not zoning, not masquerading as a zoning ordinance, but it would have to be a limited general ordinance, specifically designed, carefully worded. And so I think we'd want to be very cautious in how this is implemented. I think there's a lot of common sense opportunity here to add some design standards into the Master Matrix Review. But it has to be tempered by
this caution that the courts are looking really closely at this issue of local control in egg production. And then I guess the final caveat is it's hard to review things in this master matrix area because for better or worse, Story County is on the cutting edge. Talking to Gene Tinker, I think his slideshow from 6 months ago generated a lot of interest among counties. I don't think any county has really taken any explicit action yet. So we'd be kind of a forerunner. So again, another reason to slow down, make sure we do it right, and make sure it passes legal muster.
Thank you. So I have one question from what you're about, and I really appreciate you laying it out for us. But you specifically mentioned this idea of a filter, and I go to that because, Gene, I believe in your presentation, talking specifically about this concept of the filter and it not being clearly defined, is what really was the trigger, Morris, for this entire meeting, if that's fair to say. And so I think it's fair for us to spend just a minute on that to get some clarification. So as it's currently listed, and you said it's question 14 in the master matrix, and it says installation of filters designed to reduce odor from confinement buildings, exhaust fans, and you can get 10 points. You can get 8 in air and 2 in community if, in fact, you put in that filter. And, Gene, I don't want to speak for you, but as I recall your presentation, you said, okay, that's not the word filter is not really clearly defined. So if the county wanted to define filter, meaning, okay, is it a paper filter that goes over the exhaust fan or is it some kind of biofilter, the county might have the authority to do that. Is that a fair representation of what you said?
Yes.
Okay. So then my question comes down to this. Let's say we get a master. Let's say Story County went down the road and Ethan was okay with it, and Story County said in order for anybody to qualify for these 10 points on question 14, they would have to install a biofilter. And so then we get one of our producers who submits a master matrix, and they count filter for 10 points, and that gets them to 445. And we say, our committee looks at it and says, no, wait a minute. Story County said a paper filter is not enough. It's got to be a biofilter. Therefore, you don't get those 10 points. So now it goes to 435. We deny it because it's 440, which means it automatically comes to DNR to review. Would you review that with the county standard or with the existing state standard?
The county standard, because the state does not have a standard.
So whatever standard the county put in, if there is no state standard, you would review it again based on that.
And so what we're primarily going to look at is what did the county select for a standard if the state doesn't have one. And then more importantly, our engineers are going to look at that design, operation, and maintenance to make sure what is submitted for design, operation, and maintenance is appropriate for the standard that that county has selected.
Okay.
And I'd like to follow up on this same train of thought as Margaret was doing a very thorough job of trying to get all of the presenters and making sure that we had information. I believe is he a colleague of yours, Paul Petitti?
Petitti,
okay, who's an environmental engineer. She also corresponded with him. And we asked him about how the DNR would look at this biofilter. And his response back indicated that he would likely go against the county. So Margaret referred it to me, and he had made a comment here about he had a set of standards but couldn't share them. At which point, as most people may know, I'm a former journalist in here, and that made my little bells go off. So I asked to see the written standards, and he did respond them saying, we do not have any written policy. Okay, so can you just please confirm that the DNR itself does not have any written policy in evaluating when something comes to you, correct? Like in Rick's example, it's going to be it's the individual evaluator, is it, that looks at?
It should be the individual evaluator for the DNR should be supporting the decision of the county and let the county set the standard. To my knowledge, that is not in writing. To my knowledge, we don't have any written standards in writing, but our staff should be consistent in letting the county select the standard for those items on the master matrix where they can do so, and enforcing the standards selected by the county. That is the way it is supposed to work.
Is that the way, Gene, that it seems to have worked with those counties who said no, and then an appeal has gone forward? I'm just trying to get a feel for what reality is for us as we move forward.
To my knowledge, most of those where the county recommended denial, the county had also given the master matrix a passing score, and in doing so, prevented the DNR from reviewing the master matrix. So if the county gives a passing score, even if they recommend denial of the permit, the DNR is prohibited from reviewing the master matrix. All we get to do is take those items and put them in the construction permit, but we don't get to make a decision on whether or not this is adequate.
Thank you.
Okay. So then, Margaret, as we go through this, I think the first thing I'm going to ask on every one of these, so the first proposed facility characteristics that you have here is additional distance to critical public area. And what I'm hearing is the only way we have any ability to even consider something like this is if there's not already a established standard. We don't have the ability to take an established standard and strengthen it. Am I hearing that correctly, Gene? So that's the first thing I want us to do in every one of those, because while we could have you spend a lot of time talking about additional distance to public areas, if we don't have the ability to do anything about it, we're just wasting everybody's time talking about it today.
I agree with that. Okay. Except that there might be the definition of county-owned land and what we have on the books. I just wanted to make sure that is on the books. So some of these are not necessarily for a change, but just for... Additional study needed.
Okay. So, all right, so I'd ask, let's start and go through them. And what I'm going to ask is we don't spend any time at all on things that, you know, might be pie in the sky. Somebody'd love to do something with them, but we don't have the authority to do anything with it. Let's just move on from those.
And then we go through certain reasons regarding some discussion on policy versus ordinance.
We're going to come back to Ethan pretty regularly. I think you got your schedule clear, don't you? All right.
Okay. So I listed 44 procedures that a panel of planning operation could do. And then there are several that are no change, and then after study there's more that require no change. And as Rick pointed out, you don't want to talk about the county-owned land. That would be something that we would just check on after this meeting. So we could skip down to...
So what we're saying is critical public areas includes all county-owned land. Is that what we're saying?
I'm sorry.
Critical public areas includes all county-owned land. Is that what you're telling me right now?
I think we're
There's a definition in code that clearly spells out what critical public areas are.
Okay.
And part of that does reference county-owned areas. If they're identified in what's called the Outdoor Adventure Guide, which is a publication by the Iowa Association of County Conservation Boards that identifies all county land throughout the state.
Okay.
That is routinely updated.
Right.
The last reference, I believe, is 2016 for that.
So generically, Mike, can I think of that as county-owned public access ground, places that we're encouraging the public to go?
Correct.
Okay.
That's my interpretation.
And Mike, is that list usually accurate then?
Yes.
Okay.
And we've been scoring it that way in the past. We've been looking at.
And, yeah, my understanding is, you know, the standard is 500 feet. Minimum, and there's no gray area that I see in that.
Okay.
So you're saying that the standard is defined somewhere written down, or it's just...
It is defined.
It is defined. Thank you.
Okay.
And that also includes option number 6.
All right, so 1 and 6.
2
is liquid manure.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay.
So 1 and 5. Well, we'll go 1 at a time. We'll go 1 at a time. So that takes care of number 1. Number 2 is liquid manure is covered. Is there a gray area there that we need to talk about?
Yes.
Okay.
If you have a pit on your building, it is considered covered.
Right.
If it isn't a pit, so if it's a buried pit, there's still a possibility of lagoons or ponds, things like that. And then, so the coverage could be a permeable one or a non-permeable one. And I recommend we include verbiage that would require a non-permeable coverage.
Okay. And Gene, is that gray area? As you read this, that one, whether it's a permeable or impermeable cover, would be something that the county could look at.
Well, when we look at the definition of covered, it does state that means organic or inorganic material. And then it talks about inorganic materials could be a top layer of straw, other crop residue, etc.
Right, but that's permeable.
Correct. So so you can't, my understanding was we're going to recommend it be only impermeable.
That's what I heard Margaret say, and my concern is part of your definition says it can be something that's permeable.
Yes.
Which tells me that we don't have the ability, Margaret, to do what you're suggesting. Okay, all right. So we can take that one out. Emergency containment area.
Before you go on that, would they be able to say 90, the field shows 90% of the surface area? So it's already defined as 90% of the surface area. So that's the standard. Okay, never mind. Okay.
You're good,
Diagram?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So emergency containment area, which as I understand it is an area that would catch anything that spilled or leaked, right? Okay, what's our gray area there? Who am I talking to?
I'd say two items I noticed were the soils. How do we verify the low permeability soils? I don't know how we verify that other than the soils map. I don't know if they're hauling dirt in to build that from off-site, so maybe an extra check to make sure they're low permeability. And the other thing is the definition of emergency containment area. I'm not sure what that definition is, so that might...
Gene, can you help us with that one?
We don't actually have it defined.
Okay. So there might be some flexibility for the county to look at more clearly defining what an emergency containment area is. And now just understand, this is not anything the county can require. It's just if we define it, we can say, here's what you have to do in order to get the points on this area, right? So we could more clearly define, if we chose to, what an emergency containment area is. And as far as determining what kind of soils are there, well, how would we do that, Darren?
You don't have to verify that after the fact, so it'd be hard to do up front.
Okay. Yeah, because we're talking about doing it before we recommend approval or denial.
Yeah, correct.
All right, so I'm gonna list that one. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Laura.
And I have a question just based upon that, back to Mr. Tinker. Is it possible to issue a permit with conditions on it?
Well, when we issue permits, everything in is a requirement. And so that if it's conditions, they're required to meet that. Otherwise, their permit is not effective.
Okay.
If they don't meet all the conditions we put in the permit, they're basically building illegally.
Okay. So in the event of the low permeable soil, even though we really can't check it until afterwards, I mean, that would be the last ditch. I wouldn't want to put a lot of money into a building and then maybe not have the right soils, but it would be possible to pull the permit after they've built it if the soil is not low permeable.
Well,
my
impression would be before they submit a permit application, they're going to know where they're going to build this emergency containment area. And since they know where they're going to build it, they can pull soil samples and have it analyzed. And if it's pure sand, they know it doesn't meet the requirement. So now they've got to come up with another strategy for how they're going to meet the points, whether they're going to...
A county could require a core soil sample demonstrating what kind of soil is there in order to qualify for those points if a county chose to. Ethan, you agree with that?
Yeah.
All right, so I've got that one pulled out, that one can warrant some more study if we so choose. Installation of filters, we've already talked about that. Do we need to talk about filters some more, or are we good that's one that the county could look at if it chose to?
Yeah.
Utilization of landscaping. What's our gray area there?
Plan operation maintenance. I think that leaves the door open a little bit for us to put design criteria on.
Okay. So as I see, the DNR already does some, right? It should include, what, 3 rows of trees and should be an appropriate mixture for the site, including evergreen and non-evergreen. What other things do you think we could weigh in on, Margaret?
Well, Jerry wrote something and talked about sort of, and it's not exalting you, but sort of coming from the planning and zoning verbiage, is to do it like they do any other building on a site.
Yes.
And then pervious areas or things like that.
Sites that have natural occurring resources, try to focus on the location of the building in areas that might provide the maximum amount of buffer from adjacent dwellings or other uses, and it also would provide benefit to the building itself and the livestock from wind and elements and whatnot. So that's kind of how.
Right, but what I've seen from these, the ones that get built, at least the ones that have been built recently here in Story County, they go in and they plant, I think I'm oversimplifying, but they plant a row of really fast-growing trees, and then they put in a row of evergreens, and then they put in a row of maybe a little more slower-growing trees, and over the course of a few years, you can't even see the building anymore, right? It gets up and goes. Are we saying that's not the practice we would want and that we have the authority to change that?
I'm just saying, as a first option, if the parcel where they're going to locate the building and the use, if there's natural reoccurring resources, to take advantage of those resources for siting to start with.
Okay.
And I think, additionally, we could request additional materials. I also suggested something that we do for other non-residential uses, which is the 20% impervious landscaping requirement, 20% of the footprint of the building, 20% of the graded area, the changes that are going to take place to require
that. Yeah, so my fear there is, Jerry, I think you're getting awfully close to doing some kind of zoning requirement on ag land.
Yeah.
And I'm going to look at Ethan when I say that.
Yeah, that has the earmarks for the language of zoning, and that would be something to challenge.
Another thought I have as I hear that is that even Mr. Tinker in his presentation says that site separation requirements are not subject to negotiation. I mean, this is what they are. So as they're going out to determine where to put the CAFO on the site, they're already measuring and sometimes looking at maybe just getting it right so that they are the right sites from. So I wonder if that would be challenged because it would be interfering with something that is a standard. I don't know, Ethan. Should I take my non-law license hat off?
That sounds fair. If it's defined by administrative code, we can't preempt that. And those site distances are set forth in that. We can't touch them.
What if they can meet those requirements and still take advantage of the natural landscape?
Absolutely. I just don't think we could require it in order to score points. I mean, to me, this one gives us one of those at least, right? And to me, when they give us an at least, it means once they meet that, we can't ask them to do any more without giving them the points. Gene, I'm looking at you because I want to make sure I'm not too far out over my skis.
Well, I guess I see that as a very gray area because it does say at least. I don't know if the county can require more than that or not. I think that would be a challengeable instance because it says at least. If they've got at least 3, then they meet it. On the other hand, is at least defined? I'm guessing that that three rows is adequate.
Right.
So, but
well, and I just turn to Ethan and I go back and I say, it looks to me like they're saying you must have at least three rows. And so if we say, no, no, in Story County you got to have four rows. And here's the kind of trees it's going to be. And here, I just feel like that's us stepping over what we're allowed to do. Ethan, maybe I'm missing that one. Maybe this one's worth more study. I'm not seeing it as worth more study right now.
No, it seems like it'd be subject to challenge that requiring 20% of the land to be used for this is a zoning restriction. You cannot use this 20% for anything else. We'll go back to exempt is exempt. We can't pull the zoning rule. It is primarily adopted for the pull. That's the nature of the use.
Yeah, Gene and I are clearly seeing the at least in different ways. You're seeing the at least as we can go beyond that. I'm seeing the at least once they meet that, we're done.
But I'm not sure you can't define trees because they have to have both fast and slow growing. But I'm not sure if you've got a tree around here that does amazingly well that's only suited to Story County and it's not suited anywhere else in this state, I don't see why the county couldn't put in the expectation that you use this tree as part of your mixture.
But for me, a critical part would be the expectation that a tree provides the intent of why we're asking for landscaping in the first place. I don't know. In other words, you know, if we say, hey, this tree, we want you to use this tree, but it does not serve a purpose of hiding the unit from view or serving as a wind buffer. So for me, just going in and saying we want these types of trees doesn't make any sense if there's not a greater use in dictating the type of tree. Why do we require landscaping? Why does the talk about landscaping.
Well, and my point would be that you would only select those trees that do accomplish what you want, or maybe more importantly, you say you cannot use these trees which do not accomplish what you want.
And what do we want? Is the landscaping strictly for aesthetic purposes, or is there some type of water quality?
Odor control also.
Odor control.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no water quality or drainage issue related to the type of foliage or trees.
I would say no. You aren't handing out water quality points for one in that scoring, so it seems to be irrelevant for water quality. And the primary purpose of why trees are put around buildings is for air dispersion, mixing with the wind, and odor dilution as it moves away. So I would tell you it's mostly an air quality.
Well, it's 20 points, and it gives 10 to air quality and 10 to community. And so I would argue that it has to do with keeping the air in, you know, dissipating odors maybe, but for community, not looking out, you know, you look out and you see a grove of trees instead of a confinement building, that feels a little different, and so I can see getting those points both places.
Well, and you can certainly get the community points, but there's no water points handed out, and it'd be tough to say that there's a huge water quality benefit from trees.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, you know, it also depends on the orientation close to the road. So if you're, you know, you for the windbreak, you would put them on the north side, correct? For the southerly winds to cool the building.
Throughout the summer, and you want to block the north wind, yep.
You would put the trees on the north side. But for visual, if the road is south, you'd want them on the north and south, you know. But then you don't want to block the wind because the heat on the animals is the biggest concern.
And if you look at that practice, there will be recommendations about where trees should be placed distance downwind of the building to avoid snow drifting back into your fans and things of that nature.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's a little science to it, so aesthetics is just kind of an added thing. I think this is more for air quality.
Mm-hmm. Right, but my question I'm getting back to is this one of the things that the county digs in to more clearly define requirements, or is it not?
I think the way it's written is sufficient to provide what we want.
Okay. So then we're to stockpile facility enhancements.
Okay. Okay, so we're on number 16 of the master matrix. And let's see. They already use such as an impermeable pad and a roof or cover. That's pretty good coverage, I think.
So if you're going to upgrade a compost pile or a stockpile, I would tell you that's
about the top of the notch here. Okay? Okay. So, you're okay.
So nothing there. Okay. Turnaround.
So, Professor, you are saying that there is an upgrade related to composting?
Well, it would say that the design, operation, and maintenance plan for stockpile compost structure enhancements must be in the construction permit. And they mention things like impermeable bases, so putting it on a concrete pad or putting a cover on it. The only gray area I would see there is you could potentially specify a type of cover. Can it be covered with an organic material like straw? Does it need to be under roof? And I would say that's potentially, or Gene can correct me if they, well, it says a cover, all those would qualify as a cover.
Cover's a cover. It says, and a roof or cover.
Right.
Oh, so that
okay.
says either or.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good, Laura?
I'm good.
Okay, truck turnaround. We wrestled with a truck turnaround with one that we did a few years ago, right?
I don't think they were quite meeting the 120-foot diameter on that one.
Okay.
But in general, I don't think we can change that number, but even if we could, that seems to be adequate for a truck turnaround anyway, so I don't recommend changing that.
Okay.
The only thing would be the definition of adequately surfaced. We could probably define that as 4 inches, 6 inches of rock, or even paved, which would probably be overkill in the rural area, in my opinion.
Yep.
But we could define adequately surfaced.
What would be the purpose for us increasing that? So let's say if we did put a design minimum on it, what would be the useful purpose of doing that?
Like it says here in the standard, just to make sure it's good for traffic and inclement weather, to make sure they weren't tracking mud out under the public roadway.
So it wouldn't necessarily cut down if there were a spill right next to the facility?
No, it's not really an environmental issue here.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so this one is 20 points, Loris, if they get it, all in community, right? It's not in air, it's not in water, it's all in community. And so what I'm hearing is that there might be gray area there to more clearly define what adequately surfaced is, thinking about how much rock we're actually talking about as part of the turnaround. In order to get the points. Ethan, does that cause you heartburn if that's something that we held to look at?
No, I'm comfortable with that. I just looked at the administrative code to see if it's defined. I don't see that.
Gene, you know of any definition to adequately serviceable? Okay. No history of admin orders in the last 5 years.
Okay. So this came up in one of our master matrix scoring. ICC asked or suggested that the supplier of the animals history of violations could also be considered because they are tied into the management of those farms. And this went back and forth, and on that particular case, we decided to just go with the person who owns the facility and check his history with DNR for violations. So the discussion is, can we cast a wider net and include the suppliers for violation?
So it looks to me like it's defined in there. It defines what the word interest means, right? Interest means ownership of a confinement feeding operation as a sole proprietor or a 10% or more ownership interest held in the confinement breeding operation as a tenant. Tenant in common, shareholder, partner. So I'm not seeing the gray area where because the hogs are owned by somebody else that opens the door for us to consider this. Anybody see that? I mean, I see that as pretty well defined. Gene?
I agree.
So who does own, who owns the hogs? Right, I mean, we've always heard about the supplier owning the hogs, but it's strictly the confinement itself. It's the physical building.
The building and who owns the building.
So no chance there that we can look at anything. Wet dry feeders to reduce volume.
Okay. To me, this shouldn't even be on the list here because to me the focus is saving money, reducing water. The manure is just going to be more concentrated. So you're cutting down a little bit on withdrawing groundwater, but yet you're reapplying it and they're probably going to land up in the same aquifer if they get it in there, right? So
from a science standpoint, I would suggest that by concentrating the manure, we can make it a more valuable fertilizer product and one that farmers want to use. So if you look at what wet dry feeders have done in the pig industry, we went from somewhere around 45 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 gallons to maybe in the neighborhood of 60. And what that means is instead of putting on 4,000 gallons, 5,000 gallons an acre, you might be down to 2,000. And if you think about what that means for fertilizer costs, manure looks a lot more competitive. And if that's a water benefit for muskies, it gives farmers an incentive to try and hit that rate.
But you need that. That's just affecting the bottom line. It's not affecting water quality. It's not affecting air quality. I just think that this one doesn't belong.
Well, you're suggesting that they could use less manure per acre.
They'd use less manure per acre. Even despite that, I don't know that there's much gray area on that one, though. It seems pretty defined.
Okay.
Anybody disagree that one's clearly defined? Okay, so now we're to manure management. Manure incorporation.
After reviewing it, I thought no change. I think it's covered nicely.
It's not okay. Land application areas have buffer strips.
Okay. Warren wanted to take a closer look at this one.
Okay. Number 28. So we're number one of manure management, but it's number 26.
Okay, so
let's see. 28.
Okay. 28. I don't know if there's any gray areas, but in Surrey County we have very few stream buffers. We have a lot of flat land that doesn't have water source going through. We have a lot of intakes. And could that be extended to include buffers around intakes, tile intakes?
Boy, that's painful. Huh? That's painful.
Yeah.
My other question is, it says, this was for a research, the NRCS's approved buffer strips, is there a range about how wide they need to be? Or is there a minimum and that's it?
I assume that they're all designed specifically for the site.
Well, that's what I was asking.
Yeah.
Does anybody have more than an assumption?
The NRCS design guideline right now has a minimum distance criteria. However, they have discussed going to a variable width criteria that would design it towards the site. I would tell you, though, by specifying that it's to the NRCS, it would meet either of their standards, whether it be right now set at a certain distance or in the future if they go to variable width based on other factors like topography and water flow. So I don't know.
Okay.
That seems pretty defined to me. As far as the surface inlet question, it says we need buffer strips contiguous to all water sources, and my understanding would be right now that a tile inlet isn't a water source.
Isn't? Mm-hmm.
Is not.
Is that involved with this disagreement about what is a water, what constitutes water, a water source versus what's a ditch, part of this bigger one, and you're saying that hasn't been defined?
It could become one, but I would tell you it would probably take law to do so. Based on the last version of that I saw, it would need a significant nexus, and that is a hard definition to meet, and not one that if I was Story County, I'd want to play around with. I'd let someone else figure out what the definition of that significant nexus means. I'm not saying you couldn't win, but I'm not saying you would win either. That's one that'll be a challenge, especially with where they are with the waters of the U.S. ruling.
Yeah, thank you.
I
couldn't think
of
those. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so no on land on buffer strips. No manure on highly erodible land, Margaret.
No change.
Okay. No opportunity for anything there. Additional distance to public use area.
That was Mike, and we put his box on that.
Okay.
And that, references, again, it's It's a black and white distance separation either meets it or doesn't, and it references public use areas, of which I think are fairly well defined in the code, and also references major water bodies, and we have five of those listed in the county, and so I think as time goes, that list in code may change with different water bodies. But right now, that's pretty black and white.
Gotcha. Work safety and protection plans.
Oh, wait, we missed one. 33. Oh, I'm sorry. I added this. I was thinking that we could require full grouting if they choose to plug a well for option number 33.
So this is like 4A or 4B or 4.5 on our list.
Agenda
list. Yeah. Okay.
So you're saying under or well is properly closed under supervision of county health officials, that you think we can more clearly define what properly closed is to include fully grouting?
Yes.
What do we do with other wells when they close in? I mean, I just want the same standard applied wherever we still
steal well. You can use clean fill in portions of that and not grout the whole thing.
Right.
And it doesn't provide as much protection.
But we allow it in other parts of the county, so we would be putting an extra standard on here, is what you're suggesting? Okay.
Once again, what would be the reasoning for that? If we're talking about a water well.
Yes. So it would be... so wells can be conduits directly to the aquifer. So if you grout the whole thing, you're going to protect it better than just layers.
Right.
Every time you present to us, you on a quarterly basis, you basically tell us what wells you've been out on and decommissioned on your septic systems and all that. So only because this is next to a animal feeding site, that you would want additional a technique applied so that we see it better. Why wouldn't we have the same thing? I'm just asking the same question. I mean, you said it right just here when you said this is a conduit to the aquifer, because that, you know, we don't know how far that well goes now. Why wouldn't we want it all? You know, I guess I'm lost. The thing is, if you choose that as your goal, your metric would be the same, I would expect.
It's expensive, you know, especially with the large diameter wells. It can be very expensive to put the grout all the way up and down. There is grant money, and these wells near the confinements, they would qualify for that grant money as well. It's just an extra protection. Oftentimes, if they're gas station ones, something like that, we talk to the driller and get that done anyway.
Would you come back to us outside of this setting, outside of this topic, and suggest that we pursue that standard for our other wells that you go out for on a decommission?
Not all wells, no.
Marty, are you headed toward that there's no greater risk at a confinement operation of a spill?
Back to the water standard. If you're trying to protect water, are you doing all you can? And if you're just chasing the dollar, really, what's your argument at that point?
Mm-hmm. Well, even with, leaking underground tanks, we do the risk-based analysis,
mm-hmm.
and so that's sort of how that's the approach here as well.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm writing down that we can look further at Master Matrix question number 33 to see if more clearly defining what properly closed means, because that's what we'd be doing here, is more clearly defining what properly closed means. So I'm writing that down as something we can look at. Now, work safety and protection plans. Keith, that's you, or do you want Margaret, or is that something that we can do anything with?
There were no standards, no OSHA standards provided, and quite honestly, our office is not OSHA experts on it. We did weave some of it into number 7, into the emergency action plan, specifically to look out for the safety of the workers, but without any other guidance, I wouldn't see us changing. We'll review it and okay. do our best of our abilities.
Okay, so nothing there. Job development, increased property tax base. Wayne, what's our opportunity there, if any?
I guess I'm not quite followed up when it says that they'll increase the commercial property tax, because the facility in question would be agricultural, unless it'd be a spin-off of something, but it says the proposed structure. And to qualify for this, it has to be ag. for assessment purposes. If it's a raising or rearing, raising of livestock, that's ag, no matter if it's on.
Right, but they can get those points based on full-time positions.
Yeah, full-time positions,
if they were,
they would qualify for that.
But nowhere that we can work on any of that. Either it does or it doesn't.
Yes.
Okay. Emergency action plan, Keith?
That is one that we hope that we've made the job easier for somebody that's submitting one. We did take the start with the ISU pamphlet, 1859, which is the one that was recommended. We saw some holes and gaps in it. So Melissa, the deputy, went ahead and expanded on it and has provided them a template that provides them more ticklers on things that they ought to be thinking about. Stressing on, you know, notification requirements and providing them some more risk management thoughts in here. So we have this for them. It goes beyond, above and beyond what's in the pamphlet, but it is fairly easy.
Okay. All right. So super. I love the idea that we would ask them to do more. I'm just not sure that we can require them to do more to get the point. I mean, if they use the components listed in the ISU Extension publication 1859, looks to me like that's saying that then they would get these points. Am I seeing that right or wrong? I mean, so I'm not. I think it's great. I think we ought to have something ready if somebody comes in and they file one of these, that we ought to get something to them saying, here's the things we'd like you to have for your emergency action plan, but I'm not sure where we can draw the line and what we require them to have to give them the points. Ethan, Gene, I'm looking to you guys to help me with this one.
Well, it says the plan has to parallel the components listed in the publication.
Right.
I think that kind of ties your hands a little bit.
Doesn't mean we can't ask them to meet some of the more recent standards, because you're saying that what's out there now has some holes in it, right?
We saw things such as them talking about using self-contained breathing apparatus, and we have expanded just to, if qualified, have people use self-contained breathing apparatus and offered them up other places. It parallels as it stands in there. We've just expanded a little bit on there to give them more things to think about.
Okay. So I think as emergency management, that's something we ought to be providing for anybody who's thinking about building one of these. I'm just not convinced that we can require it as part of them getting the points for the 5 points for the emergency action plan.
I know they know the word parallel is a little loose, but yeah.
Well, and it talks about paralleling the components and not being familiar with PM 1859. I don't know how definitive or descriptive that publication is on each individual component. And if what you are adding is more explanative of what needs to be done, I think that's appropriate because it makes for a better plan. And if it parallels the components, that's saying what the document says should be done.
Okay. I'm going to suggest we look at this one a little further. Closure plan. Keith, did you and Jerry listed? One of you or Margaret?
I provided some input. Since Ethan spoke, I don't know how far this would go.
Okay.
Trying to pull some analogy with or comparison with what we do with other uses. Language about number of days to remove buildings. Information about cost to remove. And then, like, performance bond. I'm looking for Ethan to shake his head.
I think we'll make it worth looking at it further, but...
You think we can require... So as I read this, it says they've got to have a closure plan. It doesn't say what that closure plan has to say, what they have to do. It just says they've got to have a closure plan, and if they have a closure plan, they get 5 points. Seems to me that requiring specific things in that closure plan in order to get the 5 points might be going beyond what we can do.
I think it'd be worth looking
at. Okay. All right. Let's look into it first. Environmental management plan.
I think that is site-specific. The only thing I would like to see that I don't know if we can is as recognized by the department and Story County. I'd like to add and Story County just so that we get to be involved in that.
And then that would say two for number 44, monitoring wells, department and for the county. I think that's a good one.
So aren't we involved by scoring the master matrix?
Right. I don't think we're being correct. I don't think one thing we can do is change the language of the master matrix itself. That's by the by commission. That's been generated by them with the pool's monitoring.
Okay. So groundwater monitoring.
That's the thing. So that would be no change as well.
No change as well. All right, so that gets us to the end. Here's what I've got. I want to make sure that I've kept track right. So question number 13, emergency containment area. Question number 4, filters. Question number 14, filters. Question number 19, truck turnaround specifically adequately surfaced, meaning can we require a certain amount of rock. Question number 33, which was not on our agenda. Question number 40, emergency action plan. And question number 41, the closure plan. Anybody else have something different than that of the items that we will look at further? I'm sorry?
33
and then I have 40 and 41. Okay. So. Yep, Mike.
I'm sorry, I got one real quick question. Come back up to 25.
Wet dry feeders.
Wet dry feeders. Just real quick. I know, Professor, you gave an answer on this. I'm curious to hear from you or Gene. It says wet dry feeders or other feeder watering systems that significantly reduce manure volume. Has there been a kind of a litmus test put to what significant means?
That's a good question. I would say no.
Study showed that there was like a third of a gallon per pig per day saved.
Yeah, in manure from a wet dry feeder. But if you ask me to define what significantly was, I would tell you a wet dry feeder, that sounds significant to me, right? We went from 1.3 to 1 gallon. That's significant, but it's what else would be significant, right? If you were at a dairy operation, we don't have wet dry feeders. What counts?
Can the application
it depends on the equipment. Some of them can, some of them can't.
Okay, so they might have to go back and add water?
It's doubtful they would try and add water. They'd probably try and find equipment that could handle it.
Okay.
Professor, does the increased concentration of nitrate in this thicker sludge or whatever, is that pose any possible environmental problems for runoff?
It's nitrogen, not nitrate in manure. It'll turn into nitrate after time. No, they'd still have to follow their manure management plan and hit their total nitrogen application rate. So based on their manure plan, we're going to hit, no matter what, the same units of nitrogen.
Okay, thank you.
I think the primary interest in that item is by using less water, we have less chance of the pit getting full and running over at times when we're not ready to land a fly. Mm-hmm. So I think that's primarily how we're protecting the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. Okay. So thank you, everybody. I'm going to go, Keith, I'm going to start with you, and I'm going to go right down the line. Any thoughts, and then we're going to get to public comment. Any thoughts, finish up, Melissa, Wayne, Darren, Mike, anything additional? Here?
Nothing, thank you.
Anything, Gene? Margaret, anything?
I'm just wondering, for Ethan, would it be more doable if we could adopt a policy as opposed to an ordinance? Would that be more doable, and then it just kind of works into the master matrix? Or do we have to do an ordinance?
I think my preference at this point would be for a general local ordinance as opposed to policy. That way we have an enforcement mechanism. Clear, we follow the ordinance adoption procedures in the county court of ordinance. We have a public hearing and everything. Uh-huh. And then we publish. Again, it's clear.
Okay, so what I'm hearing then, Ethan, is until and unless the county were to adopt an ordinance on any one of these items that we've talked about, master matrix scoring is as it exists right now, and then once we adopt one, we'll score, if we adopt one, we'll score the master matrix utilizing that criteria for that specific question in order to get the points.
Yeah, it's important that everybody has noticed that a change occurred.
Right.
And that this will be the new design standard moving forward. If you hope to achieve points in that category, you need to meet the design standard.
Here's what you have to do to get points in that category. And then, Gene, you believe that if the county goes through that in areas that are appropriate, then that's what the DNR should utilize in the event you're scoring something from Story County.
Yes, because that's what makes it a county tool.
Okay.
May I add one thing?
Yeah, please.
This in no way affects existing systems, only as they expand. I had that question earlier this week.
Yeah. Well, and we haven't done anything. So anything, if we were going to do, what we've opened the door now for on is potential further conversation on any of these things. And at the end of this meeting, we'll get to, okay, what does that mean? How are we going to look at some of these things? But if you take the whole ordinance, which would mean three readings, I mean, it would take some action, longer-term action by the board to do any of this. Right? Ethan, anything to close us out before we get to public comments?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And we may have some more conversation depending on the public comments. So now's the time where we're going to open it up and hear from anybody who wants to talk. I told you at the beginning of the meeting, I'm going to ask first time through. We're going to go 3 minutes apiece. And if we get all the way through and everybody who wants to talk has talked and somebody wants to come back up, we'll do that. Everybody's going to have a chance to speak, but I'm going to start with those who filled out the little form. And Evan Berger was the first one to fill out a form. So, Evan, I think we've got you got a microphone at the podium. I think we've got you set up at the podium.
All right. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Thanks, Evan.
Great. Yeah, Evan Berger. I live down in Slater. I'm also a member of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, Margaret mentioned earlier. In my 3 minutes, my big point is I kind of want to broaden the conversation. I think this is a really productive meeting. I think one problem with a lot of these processes that I've gone through is that you never really get DNR, county, different county employees all in a room together and talk out what exactly is, make sure everyone's on the same page. So I appreciate that. But I do think, my opinion is I think the master matrix system is broken. And it's not just me. There's a growing number of people across the state who are agreeing that, this thing was passed back in 2002. And as you can see from the different categories that are required on the scoring, it had the intention of protecting Iowa's air, Iowa's water, and Iowa's communities. And I think in the 15 years that have passed since the system was put into place, we've seen all three of those categories go downhill. Our water quality, the water quality crisis has only gotten worse since the master matrix system was introduced. Air quality continues to be a massive problem, and rural areas continue to depopulate because of the collapse of family farms. So I think the time is high to revisit the master matrix system. And yes, there are changes that small tweaks, fiddling around the corners that you can do within the current master matrix system. One that I would like to add, or I don't know if it's too late, but to the list of specific items is number 17. No one has ever explained to me how regular inspections of a full manure pit that is below ground could possibly happen. That's part of that scoring, and a lot of applications take those points and they just say regular inspections will happen. How does that happen when the thing's full of manure for virtually the entire year? How do you know if the thing's cracking? How do you know if it's leaking into the ground? But that's beside the point. I mean, I think the bigger question that we should be asking ourselves here in Story County, especially the three of you as the kind of elected leadership of Story County, is what can we do to make this system better? So, Rick, I appreciate how you opened up the meeting saying that this would be about how the system is currently and what it could be. So just to focus on what it could be, I submitted a document that the Pocahontas County Board of Supervisors has sent to their legislative representatives. So this is just an example. There have actually been four counties that have put together similar documents, and these are not counties like Polk County and Johnson County that are anti-agriculture. It's Pocahontas County, Webster County, Alamakee County, and Winnesee County have all submitted documents that are very similar to this, where they're laying out specific changes that they would like to see in the master matrix system as a whole. Not looking at how they can, tweak things within the current system, but how the system could be changed, and using the megaphone that they have as elected officials to call for those changes in the legislature and in the DNR. So some of these changes, I won't read through them because you should all have them. But some of these changes do require legislative fixes, but some of them do not. So as Ethan pointed out, the section of the code that created the master matrix is actually pretty short and pretty small. It doesn't list out here, question one will be this, and there will be 10 points for it, whatever. It says, you can't have negative points, you have to reach this score, and that's, basically it. There are legislative fixes to making the system better. There are also fixes that the DNR could do in changing how in its internal policies. If the board is interested in writing a letter, I'd recommend you take a look at those four letters that other counties have submitted, and also think about which are legislative fixes and which are administrative fixes. So the last point I'd like to make is just one other thing that's kind of maybe a little bit outside of the scope of individual items on the master matrix, but one place that Story County could definitely improve how they handle these things, and that is not allowing applicants to change their applications after they've been submitted. Rick, I guess you're the only one who's still on the board from 2015, but this is a place where I personally think it's a violation of Iowa's open records law. The Public Information Board disagreed, but I do think that Story County could put a procedure in place with specifying once you submit the application, it's final. You can't change it anymore. You can't go back and change your answers on the test. If you want to change your application, you have to resubmit a new one and then go through that same public comment period. So those are the three things. I think there are some specific items, and I appreciate the conversation. I think a letter laying out how you would like to see the master matrix system change would be a good thing. And then finally, putting into place, the expectation that you can't change items on a master matrix application once you've submitted it.
Super. Thank you. I got one sure. question for you before you sit down. So I hear you loud and clear. You've been consistent that you don't like the master matrix.
Right.
I get that. Would you prefer that Story County not adopt the resolution every year?
Of course not.
So you want us working within the system that we've got now. You just want to see the system change.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the tool we have now. But, I think it's perfectly within your abilities. And the four other counties have shown that you can call for changes. And,
not 11 counties that don't adopt the master matrix every year.
Right. And
is that right, 11 counties? And so I'm just wondering if you think those counties are better off than where we are today.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Next, our environmentalist poet that we've got, Jack Troger, is going to speak to us. Jack, I hope you have a good poem for us today after I introduce you like that.
You know as well as I do that I've been going for hours.
Yeah, you got 3 minutes.
Doesn't count
until you get to the microphone.
If you don't know me, so I'll introduce myself first. Jack Troger Ames. I spent 30 years teaching high schoolers about Earth, geology, astronomy, meteorology, climatology, oceanography, and a whole lot of other ologies. And I'm still teaching here today. I taught that Earth is first, or humans are extinct, period. I'm a terrorist. Let me spell it out for you. T-E-R-R-A-I-S-T. Terra, Latin for Earth. And I believe in terrorism. The Lorax spoke for the trees. I speak for Earth and all species. The Lorax spoke for the trees. I speak for all Earth and all species. My belief system in 7 simple words. Earth first in things, thoughts, deeds, decisions. We all live in a yellow submarine. In modern day civilization. Civilization, as my favorite scribbler, Edward Abbey, called it. Confined like hogs in huge hog factories, not hog heavens. So it's impossible for me to live by these 7 words, but I try. We must change the way we think about and live on Earth. We must say no to the status quo. Most people here today represent the status quo. Their baseline assumption about life is that Earth is not first, that we must eat Earth for the sake of money and profit. It's called capitalism. And it's designed for one thing, to eat Earth. It's all about money, profit, control, domination, exploitation, extraction, extirpation, extinction, death. Big pig, big pork, big egg, the Farm Bureau. Their belief system, bigger is better, more is best, was taught to them by the status quo, civilization. We must change to a system that honors Earth, not butchers Earth. My belief system was taught to me by Earth herself in a hands-on, first-person, intimate, lifelong learning experience, an adventure which continues to this very moment. And I'm not a paid protester. No one can buy my allegiance to Earth. But most, all people, you know, we're paid promoters. We are subsidized with tax money to promote the status quo. Iowa's the single most environmentally altered state in the U.S. of A. It was once 56,000 square miles of pristine prairie that's been plowed and perverted into a mere 56 square miles left. That's about the size of Ames, Iowa. Everything done over the last 40-plus years by so-called entrepreneurs to create and build ever more and bigger hog factories has been done through the manipulation of the current system, the status quo, designed by and for Big Ag and the Farm Bureau through their friends at ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council, through our current and former governors and legislators, and the Koch bros. We're told that these things are carved in granite and cannot be changed. But Earth teaches us otherwise. It teaches us that everything is changeable. In fact, the very essence of existence is change. So now it's way past time for a major revolution to move from capitalism to terrorism. I'm talking like Mr. Sanders, Bernie, revolution. We must demand no more pig prisons, master matrices, so forth. We must demand that Earth be first, not money, profit, control, domination. And here's a one-word start. Moratorium. Period. No excuses. No compromises. No exceptions. Earth must be first. I hope you'll take that to heart, folks, all of you, not just the three of you. But
thank you, Jack. Gene, I did have one question for you. So we've heard that several counties have sent forward some version of moratorium requesting a review of the master matrix. What happens when a county sends forward a moratorium? Does that have any effect? I mean, what happens at that point?
The legislature would have to take action on that. And the governor would have to sign it, and to my knowledge, they haven't even brought it to the floor to debate. So it gets submitted to the legislature, but with no action, nothing happens.
Nothing happens. So Evan, you said to me, you said it was Webster and Pocahontas and Pottawatomie. Is that who you
thought? Webster, Pocahontas, Alwaukee, and Winchie.
Alwaukee and Winchie. So what happens when those get a master matrix now?
It won't have any impact on the master matrix at all, because that's a request from those counties, but of the legal authority, nothing has changed.
Okay, so they're calling it a moratorium, but it's not a moratorium, it's a request.
It's a request for a moratorium.
Well, it's a request for a state moratorium, as opposed to the...
But they can't declare a moratorium in their county, is what I'm trying to get to. So none of these counties have said, okay, we've got a moratorium in our county.
They can declare it, but it's unconstitutional.
Yeah.
And so then a master matrix would just come straight to the DNR, you guys would score it, and we'd move on.
Well, they probably would elect not to use the master matrix then, because they say we're not going to approve any. And then, yes, there'd be no master matrix, so they'd only have to meet the state's minimum standards, as opposed to the elevated standards they'd have to meet if they have a master matrix.
Okay.
And Gene, just clarify to follow up on that, because I believe in your presentation, what you said, just to be very clear, is if a county votes to use the master matrix, but then in essence declares its own county moratorium by voting automatically no on every application that comes before them, the state can pull the use of the master matrix. Is that correct?
If they don't fulfill their obligations, basically meaning they have to submit a their recommendation to us. If they don't submit that to us within their 30 days or their 60 days, if there's a continuance, then yes, we revoke their use of the matrix for that year.
Oh, but if a recommendation came that it was a no, even though it passed the scoring, but recommendation came as a no, you're saying that the state would not pull the master matrix?
No, that's just a recommendation from them that we should not issue the permit, even though they gave it a passing score. And that, since they followed the procedure on scoring and making a recommendation, they did everything right.
Okay.
It's when they don't meet one of their requirements that they have to legally meet, mm-hmm. that we then kick them out and say, try again next year.
I had misunderstood that from in listening to the audio of your presentation. I'll go back again with that new information, because I had actually understood there was a penalty for us if we voted for the master matrix but then went ahead and voted, we're saying no, based upon principle. Okay, thank you for that.
Hopefully I'll say it better the second time.
No, but
just to further clarify, right? So if Story County were to get a master matrix and we were to score it passing and then submit that passing score along with a no recommendation, it still gets built?
As long as it meets the state's minimum requirements.
Right,
yes.
So it's a passing score, and then you guys score it, and it scores the same way.
Yeah.
So it would be a no in principle.
You're on record as saying we don't think the DNR should do this, and we do it anyway.
Right, okay. So. Super, thank you. So we've got Eldon McPhee. Hi, Eldon.
Hi.
Thanks for sitting through this with us.
Thank you. You're welcome. Glad to be here today. Just a few short comments. I'm Eldon.
I'm Eldon, by the way. From Story City?
I was going to tell you. Okay, that's okay. I'm Eldon McPhee. I'm an attorney in Des Moines, Iowa, Brick Gentry Law Firm, and I'm here today on behalf of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. I think I've been here before, as some of you may recognize me, working for representing individual producers. Just a couple of points. I would urge the board, you've been advised today that anything you do would have to fit within the confines of the ag exemption to county zoning. There's another law you need to take a look at, too. It's Section 331.304, capital A, and it's entitled Limitations on County Legislation. This was passed in 1998 following the Goodell versus Humboldt County Supreme Court decision that found counties could not regulate agriculture or adopt ordinances, and that goes beyond zoning. And what it says is, first of all, county legislation, because I heard a discussion here of what is, an ordinance, motion, resolution, or amendment. So pretty much covers everything, in my opinion anyway. And it says a county shall not adopt or enforce county legislation regulating a condition or activity occurring on land used for the production, care, feeding, or housing of animals unless, and I'll cut the words out, unless the state has authorized the county to do that. Okay, so this is a specific limitation on county home rule authority that goes beyond zoning, that any ordinance that regulates an activity that I just read,
right,
dealing with livestock production, is void.
Absolutely. So I'd be really interested to get your opinion.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, sir, but again, I want to make sure I'm clear. Unless the state has specifically authorized you to do that.
Absolutely. And so that's what from your perspective, so you heard our whole conversation here, and hopefully what you felt we were trying to get to is, where are the areas that things are not clearly defined that maybe it's reasonable for a county to look at more clearly defining things like a filter system, right? Tell me where you think we got out over our skis in that conversation.
I don't have my list in front of me, but and I'm not trying to dodge your question. I have the master matrix items written down. I'll be the first to admit, this is a gray area, whether if you adopt a requirement in the master matrix that's not specifically covered in the matrix, and if you do it by, which I would agree, you should have to do it by resolution of some kind, because as Mr. Anderson indicated, that for you to apply that evenly across the board and get everybody notice, you would want put that out there. I think if you you have been authorized by the state legislature to rule on the matrix, you have been authorized to do that. If you go beyond what they have said very specifically, you can't do. Then I think you violated that your authority under the matrix. If it's in an area that is not defined, again, I'm choosing my words carefully.
And you should. I'm trying to understand what we're looking at here. So as we look at, and I'll pull one out. So we looked at a truck turnaround, and we said maybe it's possible in the area of adequately surfaced.
And you,
it doesn't clearly define what adequately surfaced means. And so maybe it would be reasonable for a county to say, hey, 4 inches of rock, in our mind, is adequately surfaced. So this turnaround must be X number of feet, and it must have at least 4 inches of rock, let's say. Well, that's not clearly defined in the master matrix, but it doesn't. At least I don't see where it says we can't define what adequately surfaced is.
I would agree if I'm the producer, or I would say, but what if I think 3 inches, if I have an expert that tells me 3 inches is enough, someone who has experience in that area, if what you do goes beyond what other people who are experts in the area believe is more than what should be done, then I think you've exceeded your authority.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, if we went and we said, okay, you got to put concrete down for all this, you went way beyond. But it seems to me, and I'm not advocating for or against one of these, I'm just trying to understand what our role is.
Yeah.
If we clearly defined up front, hey, producer, if you want to qualify for these points in Story County, this is how we're defining this. So we're going into it with our eyes wide open. If your expert tells you 3 inches and that's what you want to use, we're not going to award those points when we send it on. And then it'd be up to the DNR. I'm just wondering if you think we're getting way out over.
I think if you go beyond what an industry norm is for that thickness, and I realize industry norms are sometimes open to, lawyers are the only ones who agree all the time, right? So if you go beyond an industry norm, I think you're on thin ice.
Okay, thank you.
That's just my opinion.
I just want to make a comment from my previous career many, many years ago. Since you are representing, you're here on behalf of your client
in
general. In my previous career, at one point, I worked for two attorneys, okay? And one thing that they told me is to remember in every lawsuit there's one winner and one loser. And that's not, it's just a comment here about it's open to interpretation, always. I'm a little in sending an attorney for the Cattlemen's Association. I'm feeling like, geez, I thought we'd done everything we could to open this up for the public. And I thought, the public is Story County, and I thought that we'd done everything to put the experts here on a fact finding. So to have an attorney come up and kind of just tell us that we may be violating law or urge that way, I'm sad about that. I just want to let you know about that. You certainly are welcome always to speak. I just want you to know that that this was really intended for the people of Story County to hear what we were just trying to find facts based upon information we've been provided.
Loris, I absolutely appreciate that point of view. I tend to have a little different one here in that we have a gentleman here who is an expert. He may have a dog in the fight very clearly, but he's an expert, and he's representing people from Story County. And I'm excited. I mean, we've got at least one expert sitting right here who's not from Story County. I'm excited when we're trying to get our information. I'm excited to hear from anybody we can. I hope that we can all agree that any information at this point before we make a decision is good information. So thank you.
Just one more point, and then Ma'am, I understand your point. I was asked to be here by Bill and Nancy Kauser, residents of Story County. I'm a farmer myself from years back before I became a lawyer. I understand what you're saying, but these are legal issues you're talking about today, and we felt it was important that you understand what the Iowa Code says, what can and can't be done, and this is my opinion, I understand. Final point I'll make, and I guess if I'm going to disagree with people, I'll add Gene Tinker to the list. Gene and I go way back, and Gene would be nervous if I agreed with him, probably. But I do disagree with Gene's interpretation. And I think maybe there's some, if I understood you right, Gene, this question of when the county denies a matrix, then the Department of Natural Resources scores it. But we all agree on that. I think you've indicated that, at least, and I want to make sure I say it right, that you believe the DNR, in doing their evaluation, must look at how the county, like say the filter issue, how the county defined that. And am I correct in that someone spoke to Paul Petiti and maybe he felt differently? Is that accurate?
Yeah, and I'll be happy afterwards to provide you. If our printer is working, I'll give you a copy of that. It would certainly be open information for anybody to see the email exchange.
If I may, I just like the code says that if the county denies the matrix and the Department of Natural Resources then must score it, the department shall conduct an independent evaluation of the application using the matrix. And believe me, I've been through those words quite a few times. My analysis, my interpretation is an independent evaluation of the application means that, now this is it's out of your hands by now, but my interpretation is the department looks at it totally independently of what you've done, and they look at the application, not your scoring of it, but the application itself. And if you have imposed a requirement such as a filter that is different than what's in the application, DNR looks at it at the application, what's in that, not what you've looked at. That's my analysis. Everybody's entitled to...
One of the first questions I asked, what would happen there, so thank you for that difference.
Well, and again, that's my analysis. The department may or may not agree with me. I'm just... what does independent evaluation of the application mean?
Okay. So, Eldon, before you leave, and Ethan, I got you on this one, too. As we look to address six or so categories there on the master matrix, and we have the ability to be institutional in the fact that we can add things to it. Does the county run the risk or at any point of having a civil exposure by going too far? I mean, if we do on an adoption basis, take something and go, can we go too far? Can we turn around and then be open to legal action?
You asking Ellen or Ethan?
Both of them, lawyers.
Well, but he represents, I'm open to my counsel on this, okay?
Yes, I think it's clear we can't preempt state law. And I think the effect would be a challenge to the ordinance, and the ordinance would be we would potentially lose that challenge. And as far as liability, I don't know what the actual damages would be. I don't think there'd be any liability. Our ordinance would just fail.
I would agree. As long as the county is acting in good faith, in somebody may disagree with what you do, including me, but as long as you're acting in good faith, and I would defer to your county attorney, but I would agree you're open to challenge for what you did and trying to get it overturned. But as far as any liability, as long as you acted in good faith, there should be no potential liability for you as board members.
All right. Elton, thank you for being here today. I don't have anybody else. Who else wants to speak? If you want to speak, just come on up and start by introducing yourself.
Thank you. My name is Linda Mergen. I live in rural Gilbert. And I was interested in what Margaret was saying, the exchange regarding capping wells. And I think what she was saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I was hearing was there's a risk issue involved as well as what the costs are. And my sense would be that there's a greater risk from a CAFO of polluting the aquifer and doing dangerous things than it would be from a small farming operation, and there's also more money that a large farmer or a large operator or producer would have than a small farmer. So I do think that there is an issue there that small farmers and large operators should not be held to the same requirements. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else would like to speak today? Come on, a lot of you came all the way here. Come up and speak. Right.
So I'm John Monroe. I'm from Nevada. Hi. I just wanted to touch on Evan's point again for a second about this question of letting people take this test twice. Uh-huh. You know, I think that frankly that takes, you know, insofar as you have the ability to impose a standard and say no, which is more important than you think, because that can't be completely meaningless at this state level. Insofar as you have the ability to do that, you take the teeth out of it completely if you also give people a mulligan. You know, if you give them a do-over, that short-circuits the whole prospect. This turns us into an empty ritual, and it makes all our time here kind of a waste. So really, we're doing this to make the county a better place. We should follow the rules we impose for ourselves.
Yeah, and John, I appreciate that. I just think there's two different ways to look at that, right? You can look at it as, okay, here's the test. You go take the test, and if you fail, it's over, no second chance. Or, as the Story County has looked at in the past, not to suggest how we're going to look at it in the future, it has been a tool that we've utilized to work between the county and the potential producer to say, let's make sure that we get these things right. And if there was a question on one of the issues, okay, do you have 4 inches of rock on your turnaround, or is it truly the distance, then we've worked with the producer. I don't think I'm misstating this, Margaret. We worked with the producer, the filer of the master matrix, to get those questions answered. Do you want to address that at all?
Any application that comes in, whether it be for a CAFO or a septic system, you always have to communicate to make sure you're understanding each other. Okay, that's one thing. Today's meeting and this committee has made that, hopefully we'll make those gray areas go away so we won't have so many questions. It'll be more clear. So that's one thing. And then it's not time wasted. If they skip from one question to a different question, those things that they have to do go right onto the permit. So those are things above and beyond a regular non-permitted system would have to do. So it is not time lost.
I guess I'd like to address also what Evan and John said, because I feel more like they do that as I've watched over the years. I have watched some situations where there have been it's gone beyond discussion, making sure that everyone understands how the standards are. And I've seen staff go out on holidays to accommodate the 30 days in an application. And I know some of that has to do with the timing of staff time and the deadlines that are set by state law. But I certainly do feel, and Mr. Tinker said this in his presentation, about part of how to use the matrix most effectively is that hopefully we can get applicants to come in before, or pending applicants, thinking about applicants, okay, pre-applicants, to come in and talk to Margaret and the team and understand what our expectations are and what we would like to see, so that when that application comes in, they have answered it. They now are taking the test. And if it turns out that there are differences in site separations or differences in the areas where we may look at doing some changes like rock, et cetera, that they either pass or don't pass based upon that scoring, and then they go back and fix it, rather than the application coming in saying you don't pass on number 10 and number 15, and then they go fix it with still that time clock running. And I think that's the difference that there's that what John and Evan are speaking to is that have pre-applicants come before that clock starts to tick on the 30 days, so that the questions are answered, so when they are filling out the application, there's the test. And also that we don't require our staff to work nights and weekends in the future to try and get in an approval on a application that has a lot of questions on it, or some real questions about being able to make the criteria.
Yeah, that rush also makes it harder to address things that might be complicated.
Right.
Yeah. You guys are addressing one of the reasons that we no longer have one person scoring this thing along. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Who else?
I'm Al Irwin, from Story City. And,
Al, I've got to be in Story City in 15 minutes.
I haven't really got a whole lot of intelligent things to say, but it's like we all got to work together, and I don't think, and I know Margaret pretty personally there because she's come up and worked with me. So you've got to work with the people, got to work with everybody. You've got to feed a hungry world. We've got to figure out what it's all about. I don't think that not everybody in the world in this county is into greed and trying to ruin Mother Earth.
Yep, thanks, Al. And one thing I want to say that just brought up. So those of you that don't know the Story County staff members that are sitting up here, they were selected for a reason. I mean, these are the best of the best by the book. We don't want a lot of gray area in this when it comes to scoring. It should be pretty cut and dried. Either you qualify for the points or you don't qualify for the points. And I think we've got the experts and the right people sitting at the table. And the other thing I'll say is the Board of Supervisors is completely out of this process other than we receive the scores at the end and then we make a final determination of whether we recommend approval or denial. We haven't had to use this group yet. We haven't had to use this group yet, have we? We had to use this group once. And I think it's going to go really, really well, and I think it's a model. Who else would like to speak? Jackie, you want to come up again?
Yeah. I'm 74 years old, so I'm not naive. I've been around. And I don't expect in any way, shape, or form that I've changed any minds here today. But one thing I noticed from my years of teaching, the students that come in, they were ninth graders, 14, 15. Remember when you were 14 or 15? I do. And they'd come in and they'd start that very first day, and I'd do some weird things. And pretty soon there'd be that, what is this guy all about? And pretty soon I'd just watch it as the year went by. And minds began to listen and question. Even me. I wanted them to question me. To question what they'd been taught. Status quo. And slowly, maybe by the end of the year, two or three, to say, you were right. But I want you to continue to question what you're thinking. You may be wrong. I may be wrong. I want you to question it. Ask questions. Seek answers. Don't just accept. And now it's been 40 years since some of those kids were in my classroom. They come to me now and then and say, well, it took me a long time, but I finally figured out what you were trying to say. Now, I'm not going to change any minds here today. I don't intend to. I'm not even trying to. But I would appreciate it, the old teacher in me, I'd appreciate it if you just think on it a little bit. And then maybe the next week, think on and start paying attention to what's going on around you. Things are changing on Earth. Earth changes. Things are changing. I ain't going to say those words because too many people sitting in the room right now, I can tell by your faces. I've read faces as a teacher. I can tell by your faces you disagree immediately. You know which words I'm talking about. Changes. Earlier this month, temperature at the North Pole, 32 degrees in darkness. Just saying, changes are coming, and they're coming very, very fast.
No idea what's coming.
Just think on it a little bit. I know I'm preaching, but if I hadn't been a teacher, I'd have been a preacher. Thank all of you for listening to an old man.
I'm a farmer and a livestock producer over by Roland. And I appreciate this meeting, appreciate knowing you guys. I appreciate seeing my brethren back here. How many of you are involved in a father-son farming operation? A family farm? I am as well. My
father-daughter.
Okay, father-daughter. Great. Yeah. My hat's off to you. I farmed with a gal for, she was involved in it, so, and my wife's involved. I wish my daughter could come back, but her husband, they live in Chicago. So I agree with you, Stan. My dad gave me the opportunity to farm with him when I got out of college in 1978. His dad gave him the opportunity to farm when he came back from Korea. His dad before him gave him the opportunity. My son lives in San Francisco right now. He's got a good job out there. He called me up a while back, and he calls me every time he's stuck in traffic. He calls me every day. And he asked me, he said, his wife graduates from University of San Francisco in May, and he's never had the interest to farm, so to speak, because I was a bastard all the time when he was growing up. No, I'm just kidding. But,
and just
but now he's
reminding about your language, Brandon.
Excuse me? I'm sorry. But he asked me, he said, when Kelsey graduates, do you think it's even possible that I could come back or we could come back and farm? And before I could answer, you know, I was dumbstruck. And he said, because I want to have all the same opportunities that you gave me growing up on a farm. I want my kids to have the same opportunities. And that's what I consider myself as a farmer and as a livestock producer. And I want you guys to keep things available to us so we can raise livestock and keep a family farm in Story County. And a family farm, I don't know how you want to define it, but a family farm isn't what it was 40 or 50 years ago. It's changed a bunch. We have to keep up. Why is technology and the latest improvements that are made out there so widely accepted in some fields, but somehow in agriculture we can't accept it? We can't accept the latest, the greatest. Why is that? I'm troubled by that, I guess. And I guess that's the only unintelligent things I have to say, and thank you.
Well, thank you, Brad. And I want to thank you, just so everybody knows, I have an invitation I haven't been able to act upon yet to come out and see Brian's operation. And I appreciate that, because the last time I was...
You're going to be underwhelmed.
Okay. But last time I was actually on a farm, was I had three uncles who farmed. And a long time ago, before I could find...
You're doing this opportunity.
Right. Okay.
My name is Chad Hollingshead. I'm from Boone County. I'll clearly state that. I'm not from Story County.
Got
but
a problem.
I.
Huh?
Have you got a problem?
No, I just said, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I knew where I recognized you from.
We've met before. Yeah. And I've heard folks from Story County and Boone County before on certain issues, so I guess I decided that I'll speak up here today. I want to follow up on what he said. I'm one of those sons who had the opportunity to go back and farm, and it was because of a CAFO. I'm not here looking to build a CAFO. I came here for an interest in, when you have issues like this, they fall out into other counties. So the neighbors take an interest in what's being discussed next door. I got to go back and farm for the first time, full time, on January 1st. And I heard it's all about money. It took 10 years for my brother and I to be able to be full time on the farm. So it's not about money. We had to work hard for 10 years doing other jobs before we could actually be full-time. So I don't care to hear that it's just about money. It's also a lifestyle. So I'm one of those sons who's went back. I have no interest in building another building right now. But it is a lifestyle. We want to farm. It's about the character of the people working the land. We're not out here to destroy it. Our farm, it's a fifth-generation farm. I'm sure many of these other folks have second, third, fourth, fifth-generation farms. If we were destroying the land, why is it still here? Why are we still making it more productive every day? So I'm asking you, when you look at this, look at these legal issues, to think about allowing people to do what they do best, and that's feeding Iowa, feeding America, and feeding the world. Think about those things as you move forward. Thank you very much.
Chip, may I put you on the spot for a minute here and ask you to put on a previous hat that you wore, which I believe was a supervisor over in Boone County.
Boone County supervisor.
Right.
So
okay.
I'm no longer
right.
a Boone County
okay.
supervisor. I'm a full-time farmer.
So coming from a farming background, okay,
When you were making decisions over there, how do you balance the fact that we are all dependent on water and air, although I'm looking at water and soil quality. You're dependent on soil quality to produce the crops that feed your livestock. Okay. Where do we find this balance and also find this balance for safety? I think as you listen to that, questions about environmental safety. That's where I kept on asking my questions. What does this really do? So where do we make that balance between the fact we have to drink water, we have to eat, we would like to breathe some clean air, but that's secondary. Okay. And we know who produces, who does that for us, who provides our food, and yet we still have an environmentally sustainable future. Any thoughts for us here?
That's where confinements do come in. Confinements are more water efficient. I mean, if we were feeding the same number of hogs outdoors and we were using old open waters and we were slopping that water out of a tank, we're going to use more water. It's going to be direct runoff. Therefore, it's basically wasted. So therefore, by gathering manure in the pit, and I'll be honest, I was going a little crazy when I kept hearing the conversation about wet-dry feeders. They do work. The manure is more efficient. We put less on an acre. We're pumping less water, which means less fuel consumption. You know, all these items that add up to more environmental stability because we're using less water, less energy in a confinement setting versus an outdoor setting. And I have cattle and hogs. I've got cattle outdoors, and I got hogs indoors. And I can walk out to my cattle yard, and I'll be honest, that manure is running off out into the field. It's not being conserved like our hog manure is. Now, I don't plan to put cattle indoors anytime soon, but I can visually, I went to Iowa State, I got a degree, I mean, I can listen to all the researchers, but there's nothing like visually seeing it for yourself on the farm, those efficiencies. I can't quantify the number, the gallons, but you can see it. And that's what farming is a lot of times it's just being able to see that opportunity, to see that efficiency, and know that you're doing a better job. Because, again, like the gentleman before me said, why aren't we embracing technology in ag? We embrace it in all other parts of our world, but technology will make us more efficient. And we have lower death losses. You know, I mean, instead of being in a meeting, I should be home working hogs and cattle right now instead of being here, but one of those people that believe we have to be involved in our industry, it's just the nature of the beast. So, Loris, to answer your question, I can see those efficiencies when I compare an outdoor system. And I grew up raising outdoor hogs with my dad and my brothers, and then we went indoor, and you can just see that we're being more efficient with water, water nutrient factors, better quality animal.
Okay. Yep. Thanks for giving us your time.
Certainly, it's going to be somebody else. You guys were all interested enough to take time out of your day to hear from you.
My name is Bill Kauser.
And, Loris, I didn't mean to upset you with bringing Eldon here. And I want to explain how that all happened.
Thanks.
I mean, I called and asked about the meeting and what the agenda was going to be. And then I was asked to help get Capel Aurora here. I was doing my continuing education on spreading manure the other day. I was with Capel. I said, Capel, are you going to be at the meeting? I've been asked just to make sure you could be there. He says, no, I have to teach that day. So I went back home, and I called the person that I talked to, and I said, he cannot come, but I've spoken to our Iowa Cattlemen's Association, and I think it's important that we have ourselves represented here by an expert in our field. Now, whether it's the cattle or the pigs or whatever, just to make sure that we all understood the law. So I just want you to know, this did not happen by accident. I mean, I was asked to do a job by one of your council, and that person couldn't come, so I asked Eldon to kind of come in his place, just so you fully understand.
Thank you. I do understand that. I see an attorney at show up at something like this. I probably would have done the same to CCI.
Well, and like I say, you never know what the questions are here. And like I told this person on your council, I said, the worst thing that could happen to us here is if we have someone leave and with the comment, we'll get back to you. So I think what you've heard from your panel here, you have the experts here today. And if something, we know now what the law is and where you can and can't go, and maybe where you can go. So I just wanted to explain that.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
There you go. Annie Wilson. Anybody? Well, Sanders gave it, never got to swing this yet, but so I appreciate you guys all coming. We're not done. This is the starting point. As we go forward and we bring back to ourselves these additional items that we're going to look at, we'll be informative and let you know how we can engage you guys and educate you on what we plan to do. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for anybody who did this. All right.